You know, if I just lay here, you know, really fascinating realities, fascinating lyrics. You know, we're in this series called Knock Off. We've been taking a look at how there are very physical things that we experience every day in our society that actually mirror the heavenlies, that actually mirror the character of God, that actually mirror the kind of relationship that God desires to have with us. And one of the things we've been looking at over these last few weeks is this idea of, you know, really trying to identify whether we have the real version of these things or not, or whether we're settling for the knockoff. And if we realize, man, I kind of have a knockoff version on this one, what does it look like? What does the real thing really look like? And so today, we're going to be taking a look at what may perhaps be one of the most mysterious, one of the most transcendent, one of the most beautiful realities of how God mirrors the physical in the heavenlies. And so today, we're going to be taking a look at this whole idea of sex. Eric kind of set that up for you, you know, and, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, you're going to have some moments today where it's going to be awkward. You know, we're going to have those moments where whenever we talk about this, you know, because the reality is, I'm not going to talk about this in a language that's in code, or I'm going to do it in a way that is a language you and I understand. I mean, we're not doing anybody any favors when we talk in a way that we can't understand. And so I'm going to talk about this today as if we're hanging out on my back patio. And actually, we never really talk about this in big environments like this. We do it Crosspoint periodically, but you don't go to the comedy club and hear things like what we're going to talk about today. The only thing you hear there is things that might be unhealthy when it comes to sexuality, or at least unhelpful. And so today, we're going to be taking a look at some of these transcendent realities when sex happens, and how that actually mirrors things in the heavenlies, in the eternal realm. And so before we jump into this today, let's just take a moment and pray. God, I'm thankful that we can come into a place like this where, you know, regardless of our spiritual orientation, regardless of our spiritual persuasion, that this is a place where we can come and we can explore things that just don't get discussed, at least in healthy ways, in really any other sectors of our culture. And so I pray, God, that you would be that we would be united with our hearts today, and God, that we would be united with you. And I pray that you would help what I have to say to be helpful. God, I pray that what I say would be in alignment with your heart and with your character, and that all of us would go to new places in our understanding and in how we understand and relate and know you as God. God, I just pray these things in your name and in the mysterious and character and beautiful nature of Jesus. Amen. You know, there's this really fascinating passage in the book of Ephesians, which oftentimes has created a lot of controversy. It talks about how men and women should interact, husbands and wives, what the roles are of wives, roles of husbands. And sometimes we look at this like, whoa, why does it say that a wife should do this or a wife should do that? And it's kind of like, is that for that culture or is that for any culture? Is it a timeless principle? What exactly does that mean? And the reality of it is it just brings up a lot of uncertainties and a lot of questions. And so let me just read to you this passage from Ephesians chapter 5. It says, in this same way, husbands ought to love their wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. After all, no one ever hated their own body, but they feed and care for their body, just as Christ does the church. For we are members of his body. For this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. This is a profound mystery, but I am talking about Christ and the church. So there's some really, really deep stuff right here in this passage. And this passage is talking about, you know, that when a man and a woman devote themselves to one another, you're no longer two individual persons, but there's now a oneness that takes place. What was once two is now one. And through the act of intercourse, there's actually a linking that takes place, an integrating where people are physically locked together into one entity, not just physically, but spiritually as well. And this shows that we're one in every aspect of who we are. And yet, that's not really even the spiritual part. Paul goes on, he says, the mysterious part of this is I'm not even talking about human beings. I'm talking about Christ and the church. And so he's not talking about the church as a building. I mean, we don't even own this building. Eventually, we'll own a building. He's not talking about, you know, the church as a place that you go to and that you sit under the roof, you know, because the church is a community. He says you can be in the church or in a building, but not in the church, in a community. You can know about God. You can know about, you know, some of the things that God is about, of ideas about God, and yet not be wedded to him in relationship. And so what this is saying, the big idea that I want us to go after today is that sex models and mirrors that God has actually come down and wedded himself to us. And if this is kind of a distant, you know, principle to you, 2 weeks ago we looked at marriage and we really built on this principle. And, you know, sex models and mirrors that God has actually come down and wedded himself to us. It refers to the church as the bride of Christ. and refers to Jesus, to Christ, as the bridegroom. And when you've received Jesus, when you've become wedded, when you've entered into deep, intimate relationship with him, he actually inserts himself into you. He comes into you in the form of the Holy Spirit, in the form of a spirit, his spirit coming and dwelling within you, and now you are one with him. He talks about us being one in spirit with him. And so, you know, the act of sex is a simulation, not a stimulation. All right, come on. I'm pulling any punches I can today, all right? Because I need some humor, and so it might be bad humor, I'm going to warn you, all right? But I'm gonna go for any humor I can get. Sex is actually a simulation. It's actually a physical act where it mirrors, the physical and the spiritual are mirrored in the representation of what it means when God weds himself, when God devotes himself, when God commits himself to us and us to him. Yeah, because God is always bonding himself to us. And when we enter relationship, he's always declaring his faithfulness to us. He's actually in us. He's actually dwelling in us. And very few people actually get this. Very few people can actually make this connect, because we like to disconnect the two. But this simulation of the mysterious and the beauty of God having relationship with us, I mean, it's absolutely crazy. So I wanted three big ideas that I want us to go after today to help us kind of get our arms around this and see how these eternal realities are mirrored in the physical realities we experience, especially when it comes to our sexuality. The first is this. We have to understand that every sexual experience is a spiritual experience. See, we keep trying to separate it. We like to, you know, and we grew up saying, oh, it was bad, it's dirty, don't do it, you know, and so we have these images, or we've just always thought as a physical thing, and so we separate it from anything spiritual. And the argument goes something like this. It goes, well, it's just a physical act. I mean, it was sex. It was just sex. It was just a moment of pure pleasure, a moment of pure ecstasy. There was nothing spiritual, nothing relational about that. You know, another argument is kind of like this line. We say, well, you know, when I'm hungry, I eat. When I'm tired, I sleep. When I'm horny, I sex. It's just kind of a natural thing that comes out of who I am. And if that's the case, you know, then why do the three S's exist? The three S's, the sacred memories, the scars, and the secrets. I mean, why is it? Have you ever noticed that some of our most sacred memories are with the person that we first had sex with? Whoever that may have been, wherever that may have been. I mean, the context of that, those are some of our most sacred memories. Why is that? Why is it that some of our most sacred memories, if that happened in high school or college or, you know, someplace, you know, we immediately are taken back with, you know, some of our most sacred memories, and seeing that person when we go to our 20-year reunion is very different than seeing the volleyball coach. At least I hope it's different than that volleyball coach. Hopefully they weren't the same people, right? And so, you know, if we say it's just physical, then why is that? Why is that where our most sacred memories are at? You know, masturbation, the first person you masturbated to. I mean, you immediately know who that person was. Immediately that comes to mind, who that person was. Why is that? Why is there such a sacredness connected to our sexuality? Scars. Scars. There are bruises that have happened to us. There are, you know, sexual things that have scarred us. Things that maybe were forced upon us. Maybe somebody took advantage of us. Maybe we're dating someone. They wooed us in. Say, man, I will always be here. Come on, we can engage. We can, you know, we can get all sexually because I will always be here. And then all of a sudden they're gone. And there are scars. There's things that maybe we wish would have never happened. And even as I mention scars right now, even as I just give a little context right there, there's some things that begin to well up inside of us. Secrets. Have you ever noticed that, you know, some of the deepest secrets that we have are about sexual things? I mean, you know, you hear somebody say, you know, man, I've never told anybody this before, but, you know, I have 4 parking tickets. You never hear that. Come on, you know. It's like, oh, I've never trusted anybody enough to reveal to them that I don't recycle. That's not the kind of things we hold in, like, secretiveness. No, it's stuff like this. These are the conversations I regularly have. When I was 12, here's what my babysitter did to me. When I was in college, my roommate, she was dating this other guy, and one night, you know, they were there together, and she had too much to drink, and she kind of passed out, and all of a sudden, in the middle of the night, he turned on me, and I've never told anybody about that. See, those are the secrets. Those are the secrets. Why is it that our secrets almost always, our deepest secrets are almost always to our sexuality? It's because every sexual act is a spiritual act. It's because there's something sacred happening in that experience. There's something transcendent happening. There's something, you know, spiritual happening. Even if we're not receiving sex or having sex, there's something sacred about the transcendent in that experience, in that entity. It's always there. It always is. Second thing we have to understand. Number two, the physical also illustrates the spiritual. See, there's not this division between the spiritual and the physical when it comes to our sexuality. We like to think that. I like to separate the two, create two different experiences. I'm this person sexually. I'm this person spiritually. But see, that the physical actually illustrates. It actually props up. They actually hold one another up. Why is the marriage thing such a big deal? Why is that? Have you ever noticed that whenever the Bible talks proactively about sexuality, whenever the Bible proactively models what sex looks like in a healthy marriage context, that every time it's always a man and a woman in some kind of publicly understood arrangement or agreement based on what that society understands. Have you ever noticed that? You know, it's one of those things, and there's other translations that, you can say, wow, but what about this, right? I understand this differently, or this translation says that, and so I don't think it's exactly that. I get that. Let me say it again. Every time sex is modeled or illustrated in the scriptures, it's always between a man and a woman committed in a lifelong relationship as publicly understood in that society. Always. Why is that? Why is that important? Well, it's because God makes a public declaration to us. This is, again, where this is mirrored. God makes a public declaration to all people that he wants to wed us, that he wants to commit himself to us. And you might be thinking, man, Chris, that's old school. I mean, come on, a marriage certificate, saying I really need a marriage certificate to be able to commit myself to someone. You know, there's nowhere in the Bible that talks about a wedding certificate. You're right, there is. There's nowhere in the Bible that says that. Nowhere. But it does say that whenever somebody makes a commitment to us or to God, there's got to be a public display of that, a public expression of that. There's got to be a public commitment made that illustrates the commitment you're making to that individual. And if I'm committed to Julie, I'm with her forever. I love her forever. I want to declare that to her. And, one of the ways that society that we live in today says you do that through a marriage certificate. And even though I can be like, the Bible didn't talk about a marriage certificate, why do I need to do that? That's what I did when I made that declaration to her. If I'm in a society that says, well, if you really, we can see you're selfless with the person you want to be with, the person you want to commit your life to, but in our society, you need to drink a raw egg. I'd be like, I got to drink a raw egg? The Bible never talks about drinking a raw egg to commit myself in lifelong commitment to my spouse. But will that get it done? I mean, if that's what I got to do, I'll drink a raw egg. If I'm in a culture, some African culture says you got to put a red dot on your arm, or it's something way out of our norm that says when you tattoo this red dot on your arm, that illustrates that you're in this lifelong commitment with your spouse. And we can easily say, well, the Bible never talks about a red dot on the arm. But if that'll get it done, then that society communicates, this is how marriage is always understood in the scriptures. In fact, talking about a red dot, Jesus actually stood and made a commitment for you very publicly. He declared himself, and it was a very public declaration. He took red dots on his wrists, actually nails through his wrists, as he didn't just stand, but he actually hung on a cross, blood flowing out because this is an altar right here. And this isn't the sanitary version of an altar, but this is the kind of altar where commitments, where covenants were made in ancient times, where an animal was brought and their throat was slit and blood flowed down the altar as a sacrifice to signify the significance of the covenant that was being entered into. See, when Jesus was on that cross, when he went to the altar, he went to the cross, he was declaring, he's saying, this is how much I love you. I'm declaring myself publicly for you. And see, this is where Christianity and pop spirituality is very, very different. Because in most religions of the world, most pop spirituality, there's not a personality. There's not an entity that pursues you. There's not an entity that says, I want to come and know you. I want to come and be wedded to you in deep relationship, in intimate relationship. See, the gods never come down with you and I peons. They never make it down here. We're always doing, how can I appease the God up there? They never come down and interact. And God says, no, I'm not like that. I'm not like that at all. God says, I'm going to come down in the form of flesh. I'm going to put flesh on myself. And I'm going to come down and I'm going to illustrate physically what it means to mirror this in the spiritual reality. I want to enter you. I want to know you. I want to be wedded to you. I want to be with you. I want to be in and through you. I want to show you my devotion, my commitment. I want to show you the covenant I'm entering into with you. And my son, he's even going to dummy proof it. He's going to say one time, he's going to say, hey, I will never leave you or forsake you. I'll never do that. And so when we get married, when we come to the altar to get married and we make this vow that says, I will never leave you, I will never forsake you, when I make that commitment, I'm actually mirroring the heavenlies. I'm actually mirroring the heavenlies, and the commitment that God has for us and sex in that context is beautiful and mysterious. You can say it right now. You can go ahead. I know you're thinking it. And if you're not thinking, you probably should be. We're going to do a little group interaction right now. You ready? On the count of three, you can say, dude, you're weird. All right? You can just say it. Even if you're not thinking it, you can say it. Here we go. One, two, three. Yeah, I am weird. I know I'm weird. I know this is a weird concept. Very few people get this. It's very strange in our culture. And yet, it was very strange in the first century as well. See, the closer you get to God, the more that God starts influencing your life, the more unusual you become, the more abnormal you're going to become, the more abnormally hopeful you become, the more abnormally joyful, the more abnormally smiling and excited that you become. It's just always that way. And see, here at Crosspoint, our desire is for this to be a very safe place for you to visit, but a very dangerous place to stay. Because see, there's something that happens when we come and something begins to pique our interest, like, wow, this makes sense, this connects. But Jesus eventually begins changing us. And in fact, there was a guy by the name of Dionysius. He was the first, second century writer. We have little snippets of his writings from 130 AD or around that area. And he was trying to communicate with the Romans, you know, why, trying to figure out who Christians were. They're like, what are these Christians? A bunch of these weird, strange people doing weird things that don't just go with the flow of society. In fact, to be a Christian was actually a derogatory term. They'd actually make fun of people who were little Christs or Christians. And so Dionysius, he was actually writing to try to explain to the Romans why all these weird people doing kind of abnormal things is actually a benefit, actually good for the society. And so here's a little fragment of his letter. Here's what he said. He said, Christians are stingy with their bed and generous with their board, meaning their room and board. Meaning, you know, we Romans, we just sex it up. I mean, if we want a pleasure, we just go have sex. If I'm horny, I have sex. It's just a very physical thing. There's nothing spiritual about that. I just do it to get pleasure when I want it. And everybody understood that. In the Roman first century culture, that was a very normal thing. You had a need, you went and met the need. And yet what Dionysius is saying is Christians, they're quite the opposite, actually. While Romans are generous with their body, Christians, on the other hand, are very stingy. One person. Like us Romans, and we're not stingy. You know, and we do the same with money. You know, money gives us pleasure. We go after money to validate who we are. We go after money to kind of give us a sense of purpose, which, by the way, we do those things today as well, right? And yet, whereas, you know, Christians were saying, whereas money does this for you, we as Christians, no. We're not trying to do with money what God should be doing for us, bringing validation, bringing purpose. Therefore, because we approach money this way, we're actually able to give it away. We're actually able to be very free with what we own, with our board, with our room and board, and give it away to whoever needs it in order to communicate the message. And so this very unusual thing of being of someone being wedded to God, being wedded to one person, being stingy with their bed and generous with their board. See, the closer you get to the heart of God, the closer God gets all of us, the more you start to change. That's actually a great marriage right there. I mean, a bummer marriage would be a marriage that says, man, we've been together 20 years, same old, same as we were the day we were married. That's a bummer marriage. But when somebody gets married and they're like, man, your husband's really beginning to change you. I mean, your wife, man, you're a better person because you're married to her. See, that is a great marriage happening right there. That's what a great relationship does. Third big idea I want to encourage you to do. Allow your spirituality to define your sexuality. Said another way, put your spirituality before your sexuality. See, this is where, you know, when churches, religious people begin talking about sex, it's not too long before it degrades into, well, that's one of the interpretations. It could be interpreted this way. And there's a time and a place for that. I mean, there's a place for that dialogue if it's done in a healthy context. But let me just say this. I want to say this in a non-combative, hopefully a healthy, intriguing way. There are a lot of things in the Bible I just don't understand, I'll be honest with you. For instance, there's a pretty good argument that could be made biologically that men are not made for monogamy. I mean, men are able to have multiple erections, multiple orgasms, you know, millions of sperm within each ejaculation. I mean, men could have the ability to be with multiple women, creating multiple children with different women, and being able to sow their seed all over the place. And men have made this argument. I mean, we're not created to be with just one woman. And yet the biological, the one who created everything says, nope, just one. There's an argument there from biology, and yet God says one. There's people I've talked with say, Kurt, you know, I've always been attracted to the same sex. Always. Ever since I was a kid. I can never remember at all being attracted to the other sex. I hear people say that. People would say, you know, I got married really didn't know what we were doing. We were young, felt a little bit pressured into it. I thought I loved the person, but really looking back, I'm not sure that I really did. But man, oh, let me tell you what, all of a sudden I found my soulmate. I found in somebody else my soulmate. Can't describe it, they're my soulmate. I mean, I had those conversations. I mean, I could go on and on with a bunch of examples, ways that we begin to let our spirituality actually be defined by our sexuality. See, in a real sense, we all, if we're honest, we want our sexuality to define our spirituality. And we don't want to change. We don't actually want to change. Instead, you know, people who are getting closer to God are being like, oh man, I'm not really sure I like this. I don't know that I agree with that, but I'm going to let my spirituality, I'm going to let God actually inform what I do sexually. And this is likewise what happens in marriage. This is how great marriages work. For Julie and I, there are things that I don't always want to do that I do because I'm married to her. And she does the same for me. There are things that she doesn't always, there are things that I do want to do that I don't do because I'm married to her. And some of you are like, I don't understand that. That's because you're divorced. That's why you're divorced. You never figure that out, all right? Which is supposed to be funny, by the way. That's not a crack on people who are divorced. All right. That's just saying that if you haven't figured that out, that you know, that's a reality. Oh man, I really have to do this right here. Oh, I don't know that I want to, but I'm going to because she wants me to. And, you know, that's a great marriage. A great marriage is about deferring, saying it's not just always what I want, but I'm gonna defer what your needs are. Just as a great relationship with God says, I'm going to defer what I want sexually and let my spirituality define my sexuality. In the book of 2 Timothy, it talks about this mindset and the struggle, the tension, how it's difficult to be wedded to God in this way. Here's what it says. Paul says, but understand this, that in the last days there will come times of difficulty. For people will be lovers of self, lovers of money, proud, arrogant, abusive, disobedient to their parents, ungrateful, unholy, heartless, unappeasable, slanderous, Facebookers without self-control. So you're still with me, all right. So, but you know, I think that if he were writing this today, at least some of the things we do on Facebook would have been included in this passage right here. So he says, without self-control, brutal, not loving good, treacherous, reckless, swollen with conceit, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. So many times we want to go after the tool of pleasure instead of going after God. He says, having the appearance of godliness, meaning, man, they may look godly. It may look like godly intentions. There may be Christian bumper stickers on the car. But he says, but denying its power, meaning just because we have the bumper sticker, just because we're looking religious, doesn't mean the faith is real. He says, avoid such people. For among them are those who creep into households and capture weak women. In other words, he's saying, understand, there are certain men who understand that women need validation and they will go and prey on those women. Burdened with sins and led astray by various passions, always learning and never able to arrive at a knowledge of the truth. I think that may be the worst line in the whole passage right there. Always learning and never able to arrive at the knowledge of the truth. Meaning always getting new information, always, you know, getting new spiritual insights, and yet never actually making a change. It's like going to a therapist, going to a counselor, saying, man, I need to change. Life's not working. I really need to change. I'm getting new insights every time I meet with you, but I never put them into practice. See, when we're wedded to God, these words can never be spoken. Because God affects us. He infects us. He propels us to entirely new places. So, as we think about these things, how do we want to close this? How do I want to wrap this up? And I want to talk to groups of people as we kind of put a wrap on this today. And I'm going to paint very broadly today with broad brush strokes. And so generality, so it doesn't mean everybody falls into this category. But let me first talk to the men in the room. Because the last passage talked about men who prey on women. Now, I understand not all men do that. I know that all men are not doing that. But I want to speak generally to men. See, men, listen, you are at your best when you are a protector, not a predator. That's what I loved about that clip from Modern Family. I mean, Jay, he's sexy, man. It is sexy when you are protecting your family instead of preying on someone. When you're looking out for the best interests of your home, even when you don't want to, instead of praying and saying, how can I use this situation to manipulate and get exactly what I want? I mean, man, you can use your physical strength, your emotional abilities, your intellectual prowess, your creative abilities, your ability to envision, to do one of two things, to actually protect those who are weaker, to protect those who need protection, or to prey on those who are weaker, which really only is trying to seek some kind of validation for yourself that only really should come from God. You might say, well, what does this look like? Well, a couple ways this kind of gets walked out. For one, you know, if there's anybody here this morning that's sitting with somebody that you're dating, and maybe, you know, as a guy, you're sitting there like, man, I don't believe this guy. You're like doing this number. Ignore this guy. He doesn't know what he's talking about. This is ridiculous. You need to stop that. You stop that. Maybe you need to have a discussion about this kind of stuff. See, you're planting seeds trying to get the person you're with to be like, oh, man, I'm not. See, predators are never open to new information. It's one of the unique things about predators. You know, another way this gets walked out, you know, is you actually leave cues in your life that remind you of how precious women are. You do cues that remind you of how precious, how wonderful, and how esteemed women are. See, one of the ways that men prey on women is they dehumanize women. And we do this to anybody that we try to prey on. It could be politically, it could be racially. We dehumanize. We come up with derogatory terms to refer to the person we're trying to dehumanize, to take the edge of, they're not really human, so it's okay when I put them and slate them well below me. And so one of the things we do, you know, and not all of us are going to do this, because I know all of us are not in relationship with God. And so you might be thinking, man, why would I do this, Kurt? I mean, I'm not really interested in pursuing the things you're talking about. You might not do this. But for any man who says, I want God, for any man who says, you know, I want to be a protector, I want all of God's goodness in me, I want all of God's goodness through me, I want to feel God's grace, I want to be a guy who's going after God, you do the no-brainer thing of when you get home today, you get your iPad out, you get your iPhone out, and you remove every song that has bitch, whore, hoe in it. And you're like, oh no, man, I work out to those songs. It's the beat, man, it's the beat that drives me. I'm not listening to the words. No, that affects you. It affects you. The word bitch, whore, and hoe are dehumanizing so that you see that woman as less than human. It's a no-brainer. It's a no-brainer for anybody who wants to go after God. Listen, if you use those words in reference to my wife or daughter, you and I have an issue. We're not good. We're not good. These are God's daughters we're talking about. God's daughters. Women. I think one of the things about you, and again, I'm speaking in broad generalities here for a moment. I think generally women are much more, understand love much more than men. I think women are much more empathetic than men. I think women are much more selfless than men. I think one of the great God characteristics that God gave you is a deep, deep understanding of love. And one of the things I think that happens is that sometimes when you're in a situation, when you're dating someone, you're with somebody, your heart is to give that person love. And sometimes out of the purest of intents of just wanting to express love to that person, you go to the full expression where the intimacy isn't matching the commitment. You have sex with them. See, intimacy and commitment should always match one another. You go to the full expression of intimacy and have sex with them, and there might be a validation thing going on there. But I really think it's just purely wanting to express love. Let me tweak your perspective on that a little bit. See, the best love you can give, and the best way to say this is the best way you can serve the person you're with to say I love you is to practice oral contraception, which means saying no. All right, what did you guys think I was going to say there? What else is oral out there that, you know, I might encourage you to do? Oral contraception, because honestly, listen, the guy you may marry the guy you're with someday, and he's not going to be like, oh, you're saying no, great, that communicates you love me. He's not going to get it right now, okay? I can guarantee you. But I want you to be bigger and wiser than that. Here's the thing. See, someday you may marry this guy, and someday he's going to realize, man, she said no when we were dating. So when that guy, that predator, starts kind of coming around her cubicle at work every day, kind of just starts hanging out, kind of starts preying on her, he doesn't have to worry. Your husband doesn't have to worry a bit about you saying yes to him, because he remembers, man, she said no to me and we were dating. You know, I don't have to worry about some guy preying on her, because she's strong. She's the ability to say no. See, no is one of the most loving things that you can say. Those of us men and women who, you know, various ages, you know, regardless of what age you are, maybe you've never had intercourse. You've never been sexually involved with somebody. I just want to say to you, way to go. Way to go. Well done. And I just feel like I need to say that to you. Because, you know, I don't know. You're not going to hear that in a comedy club. You're not going to hear that, you know, when you're in another large group setting, you know, and they're talking about this. Nobody's going to be, you know, saying that. And yet, that's not said to devalue or to, you know, be critical of anybody who's not been able to do that in their sexual past. What I'm saying, though, is if you've not had intercourse with someone, if you are protecting that until you're in a committed marriage relationship, you have had some very, very hard decisions to make. And I just think that I need to say way to go, way to go. Men and women who are married, this one's a little bit harder. It is interesting because whenever we talk about these things, it's interesting because people who are married have the worst times with some of the stuff I'm going to say right here. Or have been saying this morning. And you think I'm kidding. I'm not. Sometimes I think the 20-something, 30-something crowd, people who are dating, sexually involved with people that maybe they shouldn't be, that's the group that would have the hardest time. No, it's usually married people. And especially people who are married longer. Married longer. So here's what I want to say to married people. I want to encourage you to be selfless with your body, with your spouse, and creative sexually. Selfless with your body and creative sexually. That's what I encourage you in. Because see, marriage, sex, is meant to mirror this eternal reality of God. And one of the greatest traits that God has is God is a creator. In fact, I believe he's still creating today. I think he's still creating, galaxies that we'll someday find out about. God is a creative God, and the process of sex has to be regularly refreshed. It needs a lot of creativity. I remember the first year or two of marriage, and maybe yours was the same way. There's a lot of stress. There's always these awkward moments where you're trying to figure out, who's doing what and who's paying the bills and who's, going to be cooking tonight for dinner and who's taking care of the car repairs and, who's taking care of all these little things. And sometimes, it's like, well, in my home growing up, it was this way, but oh, no, you expect me to do that? Okay, I'll do that. And then the fair share thinking, well, I did this part, so you do that part. It just creates a lot of awkwardness. But then eventually, a couple years in, you kind of hit your stride. And all of a sudden, you figure out whose role is who and how that's going to play out. And you know your role, and it's just beautiful when the marriage really begins to happen right there. Well, sex is the same place. Sex happens the same way. Eventually, you kind of find your stride, and all of a sudden, it's like, oh, man, it was really good right here, and this is the time of day that's best for us, and this is the context, and this is how we have sex. And eventually, that gets very, very stagnant. It just kind of loses its luster. And we actually forget that we have a role as spouses to meet the needs, including sexual needs, of our spouses. And God tries to meet our needs. I mean, if we mirror this relationship, God is always trying to provide for our needs, including bringing us pleasure. That's one of the greatest things God does, is bring pleasure to us. And so I think we have to have that attitude sexually when it comes to our spouses. And I have to admit, I hate talking about this. I really do. This is an area that I'm not great at, and I'm not going to talk a lot about that. But I have to admit, when it comes to being creative sexually with Julie, I just say she could have done better. She could have done a lot better. And yet, I'm working on it. There's things I'm doing. And you're like, oh, tell us what you're doing. You're not getting that, all right? That's for you to be creative on and to be creative with your spouse. But listen, you need to be creative on your own. Creativity, it's one of the greatest ways that God created us to mirror him. All right, final stretch. I hope all of us have been convicted in some way here today. I really do. I know I have. Listen, I don't enjoy preparing messages like this. I enjoy talking about sex and how, this is a beautiful thing God created. I enjoy that. I don't enjoy, when I'm going through these, I'm like, oh, crap, I don't do that one very well. Oh, this one I really struggle at. And I don't enjoy that. I mean, I know for me, I was convicted this week as I was preparing for this. And listen, if you have no sense of conviction at all, then man, I feel bad for you. I mean, that's a kind of a sad thing. If there's not some place, I mean, something hopefully perked you and you're just like, I really need to be attentive to this right here. But you see, there's a big difference between conviction and condemnation. See, if you're married, if your spouse is good, they might tell you things that you need to hear that don't always feel the best when you receive them. It's kind of like a punch in the gut, and yet, they don't feel good at all, and yet you're at the place where there's some health in that. They're actually helping me understand some of the ways that I need to be better or to grow in our relationship. You see, God does that because he's like a good spouse, and he wants us to be wedded to us. He wants to be committed to us. He wants to be devoted to us. And any great spouse can bring the truth in a way that convicts without condemning. And spouses who are not on their A game often condemn. I mean, that's where we get moments where it's like, oh man, you're always like this, or you never pick up or do this, or, these are one of the things I absolutely can't stand about you. Those are never the pathways. There's actually, that verbiage erodes marriage. That's condemning verbiage. And yet God is the amazing spouse. He never, never condemns. In fact, take a look at the book of Romans, chapter 8, verse 1. It says, there is therefore now no condemnation for those who are in Christ Jesus. Meaning this is for those who are wedded to Jesus. He says, if you're wedded to Jesus, if you're in relationship with Jesus, there is no condemnation. Which means those of whom the Spirit of God is in, regardless of what you've done sexually, If you're wedded to God, God says, I don't condemn you. Regardless of what secrets you have, regardless of what sacred memories you have with someone that's not your spouse, regardless of how you're scarred, he says, I don't condemn you. He says, I love you. Listen, I sacrificed myself on an altar for you. I publicly declared myself to you. I made it available to everyone. I laid down my life, and I'm still publicly declaring myself for you. When I look at you, I don't condemn you. I look at you, I'm like, oh, well done. You're my child in whom I am well pleased. This is what he says to you. Let's pray. God, I pray that you would just continue to speak to us right now. In these closing moments, I pray that you would just give us some unique word. I pray that maybe it would be some unique memory that's individually just for me, something where maybe forgiveness is needed, maybe a unique picture of creativity that I need to just begin to build into my marriage relationship, sexually with my spouse, relationally with my spouse. Maybe you just want to give me a unique picture of a unique blessing that you. God, I pray that you give us unique pictures right now, just wherever we are in this moment, and just help us speak to us as we sit under this song here from the Song of Solomon, these words of you, this God who pursues us, God. May you just speak to us. Give us a picture in these moments.